Now, our next presenter is Allison Buttenheim, who is a public health researcher and social demographer who studies child health and well-being. She is currently a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Health and Society Scholar at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Buttenheim is investigating parental decision-making around childhood vaccination. She received her PhD in public health from UCLA and an MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business.
Hi, thank you so much for coming to this session. It's lots of interesting stuff being covered. I have no relationships to disclose. So this work is part of a broader research agenda that I've been working on over the past year or so, and I'm interested in two main questions of which this research is part. First of all, I'm interested in how individual preferences, and these are parental preferences in my case, around vaccination produce clusters of unvaccinated children due to vaccine exemptions or refusals. Those clusters might be within schools or neighborhoods or physician practices. And then given that clustering, how can we design and deliver interventions that'll maximize adherence to the recommended schedule in order to preserve herd immunity? So that's sort of the context. My motivation, and maybe some people in the room can sympathize, for this research started with the 2008 measles outbreak in San Diego. And if you look sort of over time at measles incidence in the US, there's at least a signal that there may be some sort of resurgence of measles and other vaccine-preventable diseases. 2008 was definitely a peak year, but looks like maybe an outlier. 2008, 2009, 2009 and 10 haven't been as high. A much clearer signal, though, is the really rapid increase in rates of exemptions from mandated state school entry vaccination requirements. And I've given you examples of two different states here. One is Oregon, which actually started already with the kind of high exemption rate in the early part of the decade and has gone up quite a bit. And this measure on the right-hand scale is just the number of kindergarten exemptions per 1,000 entering kindergartners at the start of the school year. But also in states that didn't have very high rates, such as Arkansas, started out almost negligible at the beginning of the decade, and just in terms of proportion increases, just shot up. So parents are definitely experiencing more hesitancy, more concern, and that is translating into higher rates of exemptions. And you can think about different ways that might start compromising herd immunity if those exemptions are clustered. And you can look at almost any spatial organization, spatial unit or social unit, and see this kind of clustering here, because California has great data. I've just shown at the county level for California in 2008 the rates, again, of exemptions per entering kindergartner. And even at the county level, there's somewhere more than 5% of the kids countywide have one or more exemptions, and then counties where the rates are much, much lower. And you can see that within county as well. So again, as I said, my interest sort of started with this 2008 outbreak. I'm sure many of you are familiar with this outbreak. It was 12 cases in total. The index case was imported, as is often the case with measles, in this case from Europe. An unvaccinated child, unintentionally unvaccinated, his parents had decided not to vaccinate him, was the index case. And as that outbreak spread, his two siblings, who are also intentionally unvaccinated, were infected, which you can think about some very immediate social and spatial clustering there. Five schoolmates in both the second generation and third generation cases were infected. This index case happened to attend a school in San Diego County with one of the highest rates of personal belief exemptions from measles and other diseases. And then four cases caught it in a doctor's office. One of the things we know from the success of the vaccination program is a lot of clinicians have never seen a case of measles, and it actually took three visits to a doctor's office to get this kid diagnosed. And of those four cases, three were infants under 1 year who had not been vaccinated because they were not old enough, but one was an intentionally unvaccinated two-year-old. And that just really started me thinking about what kind of risks do we think about for kids, vaccinated or not, sitting in a doctor's office that they're likely to encounter a case of a vaccine-preventable disease. So my research goal specifically with this project with agent-based modeling is to use agent-based modeling, I'll talk more about that if you're not familiar with that technique, to see, first of all, how sensitive is the clustering of refusal to provider tolerance. So I work in Philadelphia now, and we've actually had a lot of pediatric practices now dismissing patients from their practice, really for any wanting a schedule anything different from the recommended ACIP schedule. So as you think about those patients leaving some practices, needing to find new pediatric practices, how do we think about the clustering that's going to occur due to those different levels of tolerance in different pediatric practices? And then what are the implications epidemiologically for different levels of provider tolerance for risk? So let me talk really briefly about agent-based modeling. If you've ever played The Sims, this is basically agent-based modeling. It's a simulation approach. You basically get to create a universe, and you can populate that universe with agents who can make decisions based on decision rules that you give them. They can interact with other agents in the universe, and what happens over time as these models click along is you get to see how interdependent, sort of nonlinear dynamic decisions at the micro level produce macro level outcomes that may or may not be expected. It's great because it allows us to experiment in a simulation world where we'd never be able to do that in the real world. And I really think of agent-based modeling as an underutilized method in population health research. And one of my goals with this project was to sort of see if this topic was a good application for agent-based modeling. So what I'm going to do is walk through a schematic of how the model works, and then I'm going to show you some actual screenshots from the model in NetLogo. I wanted to show a movie, but I was nervous about it not running on the computer because they never seem to. Okay, so what happens in my model? I will say up front, this is a very, 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 very simplified early stage agent-based model. But I have two types of agents. I have providers, and they are endowed with some characteristics. In this case, they have a tolerance for what proportion of hesitant parents they're willing to have in their practice. And they have an ability to influence parents' decisions about vaccination. My second agents are parents, and they also have some endowed characteristics also. They have, each one has some amount of hesitancy, and in the model I'm going to show you, it's just a 0-1. You're either a vaccinator or not a vaccinator, but you could think about making that more of a continuum. They have some kind of preference for what provider they go to. They have a measure of network homophily, which is basically how much do they like to hang out with people like them versus how much do they like to hang out with people who are not like them. They have an ability to influence other parents in their vaccination decision and a propensity to be influenced by other parents. So what happens as you run these models? So models are measured sort of in clicks, time clicks, and parents can do a couple of different things. They can socialize with other parents and share information. They can actually choose to align with a provider, basically attend a certain pediatric practice. And they can actually change their vaccine preferences. So if you keep an eye on the two circled guys here, in any given tick, a hesitant parent might become non-hesitant, or a non-hesitant parent might become hesitant. And then providers can make decisions also. So based on their tolerance for hesitant parents in their practice, they may dismiss. They may reach a point where now that this guy has turned hesitant, the provider may say, okay, forget it, you all need to leave now. There are too many hesitant parents in my practice, and you have to go somewhere else. And then another thing that can happen at the provider level at each click is a provider can reach some level of changing a parent opinion. So that's the schematic. And then we can think about sort of what outcomes we might get from the models. Once the model has run, you can look at, okay, for each parent, what is the average amount of hesitancy they experience in their pediatric practice? So if you think about, here's a kid sitting in the waiting room, how likely is it that other kids sitting in the waiting room are not vaccinated? And you can also think what proportion overall in the population of parents or patients are in practices with some threshold level of hesitancy that we're nervous about. And the other great thing about this kind of modeling, of course, is you can do parameter sweeps. So if you want to see what happens as the percent hesitant in the population goes from 0% to 20%, how does the model react? Or as the average amount of, or the maximum tolerance that the providers have goes from 0% to 30%, what happens in that universe? And that's called a parameter sweep. Okay, so I'm estimating these models in NetLogo, which if you're interested in doing agent-based modeling is a great kind of first program to use. I'll just point out some things to watch as the model's going to tick by. This is basically going to be like a flip book when I start doing well. Okay, so you can keep track of what tick we're on right there. The green boxes, each square, each one of the 16 squares within the model represents a provider. And the color is how tolerant that practice is, and that's assigned by the model at the beginning. Every time I run this model, this practice up here is always 0% tolerant. And this practice here is always maximally tolerant. They'll take as many hesitant parents as they need to. And then I can set here the maximum tolerance for the other practices, and then it's just a random draw from that distribution. I can set the overall population of the model, and here it's 750 parents. And I can set the percent hesitant. So the hesitant parents are the little red guys, and the non-hesitant parents are the black guys. And then you may be wondering about the X's. So the X's are hesitant parents who have ended up in a practice where the number of hesitant parents exceeds the provider's tolerance. And what's going to happen at each tick is those ex-parents are going to have to leave and find another practice. And again, very simplified rule. In this model, all they do is they look around the universe of practices and they find one with a higher tolerance than the one they're currently in. If there is no other practice that's tolerant enough, they'll end up down here. The outcome we want to track in this little histogram here is for all 750 parents, if they look around their current practice, what is the percent hesitant they see? And obviously, since the overall population is at 10% hesitant, we're going to see some kind of quasi-normal distribution down here around 10%. Any questions about that before I start clicking through the model? Yeah. At this point, there is not. That would definitely be a direction I would want to go with this model. At this point, parents are not influencing each other. At this point, physicians aren't even influencing parents. The only decision rule that happens in this is a physician hits a tolerance level that they don't like, and they dismiss the patients. That's all that happens in this. Yes, Dr. Fielding. Yeah, that was driven by some qualitative work, not my own, that I've seen that shows physicians kind of thinking about it this way. That I wasn't even aware that this was kind of a problem, and then like the 19th parent walked in and said, you know, I want to do some alternative schedule, and they just kind of hit a point where like, okay, forget it. Like, we're not going to do this anymore. It's my way or the highway. But you could think of a lot of other different ways to model that. At this point, I have all the hesitant parents having to leave. You could do a rule where just enough parents have to leave, so you're back down to the tolerance level. Yeah. So okay. So we're gonna go here. All right. So you can again watch the. Oops. I went the wrong way. Okay. So we're back at tick zero. Let's move this. Can talk and click at the same time. I can use a mouse. No, I can't. There we go. Oh, but they're wrong way. Okay, so there's tick zero. Okay, so two things to watch. Watch where the X guys go, and watch the histogram change. It's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So it's pretty clear in the histogram, a lot more patients have ended up in practices with no hesitant parents. They're all these kind of white practices here, or very low levels. And then some bunch of people have ended up in this super high practice. This is an absolute logical result of this outcome, the way of this model, the way we've set it up. But that's just one set of parameters that we've shown. There's the zero tick again, so you can look at the histogram at tick 7, histogram at tick 1, tick 0. So what can you do with these kind of models? Well, these models are great for sort of testing either hypotheses or looking at simulations to say, well, what would happen if there was some policy recommendation or some clinical intervention that would change things? So one thing we might ask is it better if physicians have higher tolerance or lower tolerance? Do we have to worry about this notion of physician tolerance? And let's say we had a public health goal that no more than 20% of kids were in practices with more than 20% hesitant parents. And we can compare what happens if the maximum tolerance in our pediatric provider group is 15% versus a maximum tolerance of 30%. If you go back to the 15% one, very few kids, and these are every dot here is a different simulation run, okay? And the outcome being what percentage of parents are in practices with more than 20% hesitant. This is about 200 simulations with different proportion hesitant on the x-axis. In only a few of these simulations do we end up with more than 20% of patients in hesitant practices. So the low provider tolerance seems to do a good job of that. At the 30% tolerance level, a lot more of these simulations and at lower levels of parental hesitancy end up with more kids in practices with higher levels of hesitancy. That was a counterintuitive finding to me. I thought, you know, it's going to be better if more providers are tolerant and we can spread out these hesitant kids across more practices. So I think these models are really good at kind of highlighting these potentially counterintuitive results. However, another outcome to think of is, okay, we've thought about every kid sitting in a waiting room, how many exempt kids or unvaccinated kids are they experiencing? What about the unvaccinated kids sitting in a waiting room? These are the kids who are going to be more likely to contract a disease if there's an outbreak. And here we get opposite result. So the blue dots are at the maximum tolerance level of 15% for providers, and the red squares are the 30%. And here the outcome is just among hesitant parents, meaning parents whose kids are unlikely to be vaccinated, what's the median proportion hesitant in the practice that they're going to be experiencing? And here, at the 15% tolerance level, again, this obviously makes sense, it's very intuitive, more unvaccinated kids are going to be in practices with lots more other unvaccinated kids. So there's not an obvious which is better here, high tolerance or low tolerance among providers. It depends which outcome you're more concerned about. So in terms of next steps, where I'm hoping to go with this is to sort of create a model that will simulate San Diego, and in my mind I'm calling it Sim Diego. And so I'm going to try to, this is a very, very basic, simple model. There's one decision that happens. I'm hoping to sort of beef it up to calibrate it with San Diego and use actual sociodemographic correlates of refusal and exemption that we know about, use Department of Health school data that California has so we know at the school level what exemptions we have. There's some National Immunization Survey data, existing observational studies, and then the really tricky thing is modeling these decision rules at both the parent and provider level. I just attended a great session earlier with Jason Glanz's group in Denver looking at how sort of parents and providers are making some of the decisions, so using those sort of studies, existing studies, to sort of populate the model in terms of decision rules. Then what you can do is perturbate the model to look at sort of different decision rules. Oh, I mean, one more minute, great. For example, one intervention you could think of is let's make the level of exemptions within a classroom or a grade much more public to parents and see if social norms and stigma arises around that. Should we think about making exemptions much more difficult? We already know from studies that states that have, it's more difficult to exempt, we have more parents exempting. Could we perturb this model where parents are very sensitive to how difficult it is to get an exemption? And then look at an outbreak. So I'm really interested to see in San Diego if there was more uptake of MMR after the outbreak when suddenly measles is a salient disease that they've suddenly seen. And you could add that to the model as well. So I just want to thank Robert Wood Johnson for funding my current fellowship and also the Office of Behavior and Social Science Research at the NIH for their Institute of Social Systems and Health, where I learned agent-based modeling. So
thank you. If you